Good Monday afternoon, everyone. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, and there's silence right now about the collapse of NATO, the complete disarray and chaos, and President Putin of Russia making a pretty bold announcement this morning about moving missiles in medium-range missiles in striking distance of areas like Poland, Germany, and other NATO nations. And NATO is sort of scrambling to respond right now. Is this like the death spiral right now for NATO? We're going to talk about that on the show.
Plus, President Trump has found another $6 billion in aid for Israel. Why is he doing that when Hamas is trying to negotiate? I wonder, why take that from us? That's a question. Right?
Yeah.
We're also going to talk about the smear attack on Tucker Carlson in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination, plus lingering holes in the story. We still do not have a clear story of who shot Charlie Kirk. And we're going to talk about those holes. We're probably going to fight about it because Clayton and I do not agree on this at all.
I think you're wrong about that. I think there's a clear problem.
Clayton's swallowing bullcrap, and I'm not. That's how I see it.
No, I'm not. Anyway, we'll get to it. So we got a lot to get to today on today's show.
Let's all collectively have a discussion.
We're not going to talk about underwater UFOs, though, today. I saw that on the rundown, so we won't be talking about that.
Also, today's the first day of fall. Yeah. Did you already put out your pumpkins? Because if you did, you jumped the gun. I wore leaves today.
I wore my bearskin hoodie today in honor of the show. So this is, I went fly fishing this weekend, and this, my son and I, look, he has a bearskin hoodie. That's what I have as well. I was wearing this thing out on the cold water, and it started pouring down rain, and you could throw on the bearskin rain shell over top. Look, this was in the middle of pouring down rain, and it kept me totally dry. Throw that right over top, and my son had that as well. So you guys have heard of the bearskin hoodie, right? It's my favorite. I wear it all the time now. As smart people lock in their winter gear right now, because this is hands down the best time to prep for the coming winter. Bearskin is running a 60% off deal right now if you want to get your hoodie early. It's a great gift for someone in your family. Obviously, the holidays are coming up. Lock it in now and grab it. This hoodie's built like a tank. 340 GSM micro fleece, 10 pockets. So I had fly fishing stuff in different pockets, all sorts of stuff. And that's what you can use all those pockets for different things. 100% waterproof when you put on the heavy storm rain jacket, as you just saw there. So when it turns cold, wet, and windy, you're not scrambling last minute. So do yourself a favor. Text the word redacted to 36912 to lock in your 60% off. Again, text the word redacted to get to 36912. You'll get a link. And it'll send straight to your phone. You can check it later if you're busy right now. Don't wait till you're freezing and you realize your hoodie sucks. Get a bearskin right now while it's 60% off. Text redacted to 36912 today.
Did it help you catch more fish?
That morning there was raining there. I hooked a good one. I hooked a good rainbow. And I was stupid. I made a stupid mistake on that one. Went right to the reel instead of allowing too much line out for him. So, and I was fishing with a pegged egg set up too, because they were going after these eggs. Fun time with my son. Okay. Well, let's talk about this. This is not fun. Russian President Vladimir Putin made it crystal clear that he's done talking. He's done playing games with NATO. We are too, by the way. Speaking before members of Russia's Security Council today, Putin said that Russia is now deploying medium-range missiles, formally abandoning long-standing arms reduction agreements and preparing military force in response to any threat from NATO. Now, Putin's words were nothing short of a direct warning to the West, if you want to read them that way. He says, quote, "Strategic stability in the world has begun to deteriorate due to the destructive steps of the West. The foundations for dialogue between nuclear-armed countries have been significantly lowered. Russia has warned the West again and again, but its initiatives had not yet received a clear response. Russia is ready to respond to threats, and it's not just in words," he said. This comes as tensions with NATO seem to be spiraling out of control, and it just shows really the chaos and disorganization inside of NATO right now. Just days ago, Poland's deputy prime minister issued an ultimatum at the UN Security Council, warning Moscow that if another missile or aircraft crosses into Polish airspace, it will be shot down without hesitation.
"I have only one request to the Russian government. If another missile or aircraft enters our space without permission, deliberately or by mistake, and gets shot down and the wreckage falls on NATO territory, please don't come here to whine about it. You have been warned. Thank you."
You have been warned. Meanwhile, NATO leaders look paralyzed. 2 weeks ago, President Trump released a really kind of crazy statement blasting European countries and NATO countries for refusing to carry their weight inside NATO. I mean, we could debate whether or not it's crazy, but he was saying, hey, NATO, you're supposed to be like strong against Russia and you're buying Russian oil and gas. Like you're making ultimatums against Russia, but you're still buying all, you're supporting Putin's war efforts, and yet you claim to be like tough on Russia. Okay, they didn't do anything. They didn't listen to him at all. They haven't done anything, to my mind, unless I missed something. For months, Colonel Douglas McGregor has been warning us that NATO is collapsing. It's lost its relevance. It's a thing of a bygone era. And Colonel Douglas McGregor joins us today on this with these heightened, what seems to be an escalation here. Colonel, great to see you. What do you think this means for NATO in the days ahead? What do you think this means for Europe and these positioning of these missiles? I don't think people are covering this.
No, I think you're right. If this were a poker game, Vladimir Putin has put his cards on the table, and he's asking his opposite number to do the same. Unfortunately, I think in terms that Donald Trump would understand, NATO really doesn't have any cards to play. And Sikorsky's comments are almost absurd. Keep in mind that what happened recently with these drones that we think the Ukrainians may have captured electronically and then directed into Lithuanian and Polish airspace, but we're not sure. Something like that amounted to absolutely nothing. The Russians gave all the cooperation they possibly could to everybody, telling them what they did and hadn't done. The Belarusians and Minsk did the same thing. And NATO announced, quite frankly, this was not an attack on NATO. So, you know, Sikorsky, what's he about? The president of Poland, Nawrocki, this is the new one, has already stated categorically that there will be no Polish troops on the ground in Ukraine. They've lost probably an estimated 10,000 Polish soldiers fighting in Ukrainian uniform in Ukraine against the Russians. He simply made it clear they're not going to send any more. They don't want any part of that. And at the same time, you have these Lilliputian armies, the British, French, and whatever there is of the German army that's left, are supposedly planning a coalition of the willing that looks a bit silly to intervene in Ukraine. Perhaps they think they can march through Poland, go into Ukraine, put a flag up and declare that this is their no-fly zone or whatever else. It's hard to imagine. And I think Putin has finally said, well, this is just nonsense. If you come in here with troops, we'll destroy them. If you attack us directly, we'll level you. And they have the missile power to do it. So I think at this point, it's shut up or put up. And I think ultimately we're going to shut up because I don't see any evidence that President Trump wants to engage this country in a direct confrontation with Russia. So I think Sikorsky's made a fool of himself. I think all of the Europeans have. I don't think they have anywhere to go.
Now, President Putin has said that he's willing to continue abiding to the New START treaty. NATO leaders, this is the nuclear treaty, which expires in February, and NATO leaders are saying, let's take him up on that. How about we do that? Can you explain what happens if we don't and what happens if we do?
Well, you know, there are two views of arms control. We have to accept this. On one side, there's a view that arms control is always an illusion, because you're betting heavily on the other side's willingness to comply. You can't be completely sure they're complying. On the other hand, there's another view, and that is that without any controls, without any agreements in place at all, there's potential for gross misunderstanding and the resumption of a massive arms race. The Russians have already demonstrated that they can build more missiles and more weapons for the missiles, nuclear weapons, faster than anybody else. Under those circumstances, any agreement like START that limits the numbers of weapons they can build, launchers they can use, missile bodies that they can have, is frankly a good thing because we absolutely can track most of what they do. Not everything, but most of it. And then the question is, if you see a violation, is it worth the time and the effort to bring up the violation? Because if you bring up a violation, you're revealing that you have sources that the enemy now can establish and target. So I think, Natalie, the answer is the Europeans are right. This is something we shouldn't abandon. But then again, if you're if you have the rationality and the common sense to understand the criticality of maintaining controls on strategic nuclear weapons, none of what Sikorsky is saying, none of the things that the three amigos, Starmer, Macron, and Merz in Paris, London, and Berlin are saying make any sense. It's stupid. Why would you do that? Why would you do any of those things? The war is over. And as Orban has said, he spoke very recently and said, don't waste your time going to Washington. You want to settle this thing and put it behind us, meet with Moscow. He's right. And effectively, I think that's what President Trump said after Alaska. He didn't come out and say it, but he basically said, I've done all I can do. And he told that to the Europeans. And the Europeans need to wake up and understand that what's happening in eastern Ukraine is much more important to them, if it's important at all, than it is to us. So it's time to go to Moscow. Orban is right. But you see, this also implies, what do we need NATO for?
Right.
And I think the answer is they don't need it. They've got to come up with something else. Given time, I think they will.
I mean, this really seems like the death rattle, the final breaths of NATO. I mean, who's going to be the one to finally call it out here? Trump made that threat about a week and a half ago to NATO, saying, stop buying Russian oil and gas from Russia. Like, you guys purport to be, fighting Russia here, but you're buying oil and gas and supporting the war effort, whether or not that's true or not. But they did nothing. So NATO seems like they can't respond. There was no response from them for President Trump. What relevancy do they have anymore?
Besides bluster.
Well, that's right. The globalists saw the last few months as a last-ditch opportunity to drag the United States into a ground war in Ukraine. That's dead. That's not going to happen. That's over. And if you can't get American ground forces to go into Ukraine with you, you might as well hang it up, because the British, the French, and the Germans don't have the capability to go into Western Ukraine and protect themselves, let alone protect their countries. And all President Putin has done is he said, look, I'm going to position these missiles. They can reach London. They can reach Berlin. They can reach Paris. They can reach all the NATO bases in Western Europe. It's up to you. If you're going to attack us, if you're going to move forward with this plan of sending the coalition of the willing into Western Ukraine, if you're going to launch strikes against us, we'll retaliate and you're going to lose. You know, this is back to something else that Americans don't understand and Europeans have forgotten. Military power takes years to develop. It takes decades. When you go to war on the basis of what you have been able to accumulate and build up as a minimum for 10 years. What have we been doing over the last 30 years? We've been running around with a baseball bat, beating people over the head all over the developing world who have no air defense, no means of protecting themselves, and bombing the living daylights out of them, and then beating our chests and reminding everyone that we're the most powerful people in the world. Well, that's over. All you have to do now to see the end of NATO clearly and unambiguously is also look at the Middle East, with the announcement today by China that they are backing the strategic mutual defense agreement between Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, quote unquote, completely. Well, Pakistan's a nuclear power, and it's a nuclear power because of some of the help and assistance that China provided. What China is saying, that if we and Israel want to continue to attack everybody in the Middle East, including Iran, potentially Egypt, or anybody else that stands in Israel's way, China will no longer stay out of it. In other words, Chinese military and political power, Chinese national power, for the first time in a very long time, I would say certainly over a century, is now on the world stage. So you're looking at the disintegration of NATO on the one hand, the diminishment of Washington's influence, new constraints emerging on what we can do beyond our borders, and China in the middle of all of this, not just Russia, but China. And then all of this has to be seen in the context of BRICS, gold-backed currency, widespread changes economically. It's all tied together. We're on the losing right now.
Can I ask you about China? I'm glad you brought this up, and we'll get you out of here on this, Colonel. This weekend, I had a pretty illuminating discussion with a defense industry insider who told me that a lot of the weapons programs right now are being developed They have really a time limit that if they are going to exceed 2027, they're off the table. Like they are not being authorized. That 2027 is a moment where a lot of these defense industry programs, weapons, software, everything is being targeted for Taiwan. That the focus among defense industry is Taiwan, China, the United States defending Taiwan. And if your program is going to take you to 2035 to have it developed or built, we're done with it. Sorry. So there really seems to be a movement right now among the defense industry. Focus on China, boogeyman, focus on Taiwan. Are you hearing that? What do you think of that?
Oh, yes. That's, you know, sort of the popular opinion inside the Beltway. But I think the following is what's happening. We are headed for a financial crisis. Some people would call it a collapse, a depression. I don't know how severe it will be, but I know it's coming and it's not good. So that much is an absolute certainty. If you're sitting in the defense industries and you look at what's currently planned, you're trying to get as much money for your programs and for your shareholders as you can before the whole thing collapses. Hmm. And depending upon whether or not you talk to Luke Grohman or Jeffrey Gundlach or James Ricards or Swift or, you know, Peter Schiff, any number of other people, it's either coming before Christmas, in other words, sometime between now and Christmas, or within the first 3 or 4 months of 26. So your focus is very near term. I don't see any war erupting between us and China. I'm sorry, I don't see it.
Thank God.
The people inside the Beltway are disappointing, corrupt, ignorant, uninformed. Fine, go down the list. But they're not so stupid as to involve ourselves in a war that we can't possibly win.
But also,
nothing to us.
You've spoken many times about how our politicians in Washington are co-opted by Israel. There would be no advantage to Israel for us spreading ourselves thin like that. We would not be able to focus on what they want. So that doesn't make sense to me in terms of Israel's priority for our leadership, which we know is the priority for our leadership.
Well, I think you're right. And I also think that we're not going to do any of it. You can't defend Taiwan. It's just impossible. If you're a maritime power that sits 6,000 miles away, and if you think you're going to send a couple of hundred ships over there bobbing up and down in the ocean that are going to be able to attack China with impunity, you're crazy. All of those ships will be found by space-based reconnaissance. All of them will be targeted and either neutralized or sunk. People know that. So I don't see it happening. I just see no evidence for that at all. Even as a wild-eyed China warmonger like Elbridge Colby, who's sitting in the policy chair in the Pentagon, has backed off from war with China. So, Natalie, I think you're right. What they're going to do is they're going to take whatever they've got, and they're going to try and sell it and get as much money as they can for it, figuring that, well, after everything collapses, someone sane will come to power in Washington and cut defense by 50%. They'll have to do it. We'll have to bring the troops back. We'll have to fold up the tent and leave the empire behind. We can't afford it. And by the way, we don't need it. So that's where we're headed. So if you're in that industry, grab what you can as soon as you can and run like hell.
So Nerd 101 in our chat says the colonel knows best. He absolutely does. And he's been right more times than I can count. Just go back, play the tapes back and pay attention to what's happening right now with the war being over in Ukraine, the destruction of the Ukrainian army and the like, and what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in China, and what's going on with these warmongers. And we're going to be watching this coming U.S. dollar collapse, which is all intentional as well. Colonel, thank you so much for this. We appreciate it.
Also, let's make everybody known that if you follow Colonel McGregor on X, you can find information about his upcoming events called the National Conversation. It's a great time to double down and continue to have these conversations in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination. Proud of you for continuing to do this, and we're always cheering you on, so please check it out. Dallas is the next event, October 4th, so if you're in the area, please do check that out.
Awesome. Thanks, Colonel. Great to see you. You bet.
Okay. It's not condescending, right, to say I'm proud that he's doing that? Because I'm younger, I don't know. I don't want to...
Just because you're younger, you can still be proud of someone.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you can be.
I thought maybe that sounded a little. If you don't like the tone of that, you guys, let me know.
Colonel,
I'll check myself.
Colonel, we're proud that you're continuing to have a national conversation. That's not condescending.
Okay, good. All right. You know, I don't want to offend. Yeah, I do. Sometimes I do. In this instance, I don't.
Our whole show offends.
You never know.
I don't
okay,
think you could offend the colonel.
Yeah, it'd be very difficult
probably
to offend the
not.
Colonel. All right, coming up on the show, we're going to talk with Dan McAdams because the U.S. is bankrolling Israel once again, like $6 billion. We just found that under the seat cushions. Like, okay, I don't know if you've driven across the United States of America lately, $6 billion? All right, well, how do we pull this off? I thought we were done with this, but I guess not. We're going to talk about that. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because you might have seen that the Fed finally dropped interest rates, which is great news for homeowners. Expenses, of course, are still high. Energy bills are going to be higher this winter. Wages are flat and prices keep climbing. So if you want to get out of that cycle of high interest debt, then you need to call our friends over at American Financing, because with interest rates dropping, many homeowners are seeing options in the low fives. When you compare that to high interest credit cards in the 20s or higher, well, then you see that's an easy thing to evaluate. It's like a teeter-totter. Put the heavier debt on one side and knock that out with more favorable debt. This is something that wealthy people do all the time, is they just leverage their assets. American Financing can teach you that. You can help pay off your expensive debt, free up your cash flow, and keep your budget under control. They have salary-based mortgage consultants saving their customers an average of $800 a month. And if you get started today, you can delay your next two mortgage payments-ish. Take control then. Call American Financing at 866-890-8434 or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted, AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Hey, I want to thank all of you guys for subscribing to the show. Thank you. It's free to subscribe. The show is totally free. We are not funded by any big corporation. I was having a conversation this weekend. I'm like, how do you guys, you know, do your show? We're like, well, we have a few sponsors in our show, but we are not. We don't take investors. We don't have any of that. We don't have to answer to Rupert Murdoch. We don't have to answer to anybody. So we get to answer to you. So thank you for subscribing. Again, it's free, whether on Rumble or on YouTube.
All right. Well, President's, let me try that again. Let me take a breath. Okay. President Trump scraped together another $6 billion for Israel, in addition to the nearly $40 billion in military assistance that the U.S. already gives Israel. This new arms package includes 30 AH-64 Apache attack helicopters, more than 3,200 infantry assault vehicles. These will be financed through the U.S. foreign military aid. Why do we have that? Like, wouldn't we be better off to just take that account? We have an account, a checking account for U.S. foreign military aid. Maybe we should just zero that out and close it. I'm for that. The deliveries are expected to begin in 2 to 3 years, making this one of the largest transfers of American military hardware to Israel in recent years, even despite October 7th. Meanwhile, Fox News reports that Hamas is still trying to negotiate. So you would think if that were moving forward, they wouldn't need this. Watch.
Yeah, hey, Brian, good morning. Fox News has learned from a senior Trump administration official and a second source directly involved in the negotiations that Hamas has drafted a personal letter to President Trump asking him to guarantee a 60-day pause in the fighting in exchange for immediately releasing half of the hostages being held inside Gaza. We understand this letter is currently with the Qataris and is expected to be delivered to the president this week. Remember, there are still 48 hostages being held by the terror group inside the Gaza Strip. It's estimated around 20 are believed to be alive. And the negotiations were moving forward. But earlier this month, the Israelis launched airstrikes against Hamas inside the Qatari capital of Doha. They have been stalled ever since. But officials hope this letter will help to jumpstart the conversations and ultimately get President Trump directly involved to try and reach an agreement to get the hostages home and end this war.
It's interesting, Brian, that do you think on some level...
They don't care about the hostages. They could have had the hostages earlier this year in 2024 and before
that's
that.
That's why there's so many people protesting Netanyahu in Israel.
The families of the hostages saying, please take this deal. Netanyahu say, not interested, thank you. Here's why they're not interested, because nothing will stop the Israeli government's planned real estate bonanza. Over the weekend, a member of Netanyahu's cabinet went on Israeli television and openly declared that their goal is to make Gaza uninhabitable until all people leave, and then that same fate awaits people of the West Bank who had nothing to do with October 7th. Watch this. It's translated, but it is... not in English.
במודל העסקי, מה שיהיה, שהרצועה הזאת בסופו של יום לא יהיה במקור לשערות והתכנות של מגורים. אני אומר לך שאני אפילו אופטימית שזה יקרה גם מיהודה ושומרון ולא רק מרצועת עזה.
אז רגע, שנייה, לפני זה. גם מיהודה ושומרון זה אפשרי להגיע להגירה משמעותית?
אני אמרתי שמבחינתי כן.
I said, yes, we want it all. That's, I'm not mincing words here. So, you know, they can go on TV and say, absolutely, we're taking it all. That's the plan. It's going to be ours. And the Trump administration will be like, they have to. October 7th happened. Now that's all theirs. So joining us to discuss is Dan McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute. Thank you for joining us. You have been mad as snakes about this on X. I follow your lead. I'm pissed, too. What do you think the Trump administration is playing at?
Well, we know what they're not playing at, which is America First, because that seems to be last on the agenda now. You know, I mean, the amount of money, and you rightly put out in your intro, the amount of money that the U.S. gives to Israel as military aid is skyrocketing. We have the usual amount. It's about $4 billion a year. Cumulatively, by the way, it's been about a little over $300 billion. Of course, the Israelis enjoy free health care, free higher education, because they don't have to spend money on their military. We give them the money they need for the military, and which is one of the reasons they like to make war on their neighbors, because we're the ones that pick up the tab. But indeed, it's a huge problem with the administration, and more and more people are starting to notice the fact that they are putting America second and opening up the red carpet for Israel.
We've been, of course, this comes on the heels of a number of countries now announcing that they're recognizing the state of Palestine. Portugal, France, I think Lithuania,
the UK, Canada.
Yeah, so a number of countries are now. But as Caitlin Johnstone pointed out in a piece that she wrote this morning, oh, great, you're now recognizing just a pile of rubble. Like, what's left? Like, it took you this long to finally come in. Do you think that this is going to change anything, like recognizing the state of Palestine as an actual country, as an actual state?
Well, where is it? You know, I mean, might makes right. You know, the power of Israel comes from the barrel of a gun. You're right. It's absolutely performative. I mean, look, your viewers are looking at it right now. This is not a state. This is a post-Holocaust destroyed country, and that's exactly what is happening. That's exactly what it is. But you know, this money is also, of course, it's welfare for Israel. It's welfare. It's a green light for Israel to continue to commit genocide, which, by the way, a UN commission, independent commission, just a couple of days ago determined after a 2-year study that they are committing genocide. None of us are surprised by that. But it's also a good dose of welfare for our military-industrial complex. And that's a lot of what this is about. This is a big washing machine that launders money. And it launders money through the beltway, through the rich, through the wealthy and powerful as well. So the Israelis get their war. They get to depopulate and genocide Gaza. And the people with the big mansions in McLean, they get to add on, I don't know, a new hot tub, a new rose garden, who knows?
Right.
So, meanwhile, I mean, is there any other way to see this in that it is a tax on the American people because it comes directly from us? In the meantime, the way I see it is President Trump in his speech at the Charlie Kirk Memorial said, hey, we're making all these cities beautiful. Charlie wanted Chicago beautiful. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. So they're making it seem like they're focused on America First while giving away money under the table, it would seem, because we can be distracted with what happens at home. And so how do you see the economics of this playing out? Because it necessitates more perversion of the economy, which we now see through the Federal Reserve.
Well, I think my good friend who preceded me, Colonel Doug McGregor, makes a great point. We're headed toward economic collapse. And anybody that looks at the numbers understands that's what's happening. So as we continue to spend like drunken sailors, the economy is in free fall. And unfortunately, the price of our largesse to places like Ukraine and Israel is borne by those in the U.S. who can least afford to bear it, and that's the working and middle classes. And they're having their livelihoods being eaten away by inflation and shrinkflation and all the ways they hide, because they don't dare come to them and say, hey, we want to have some war. We want to give some money to Israel, one of the richest countries on earth. Would you mind, you know, giving up half your salary, what have you, for it? They'd be laughed out of the room. They may be even been shot in the room, but they won't do it. And meanwhile, you have Trump pretending like he's the tough guy. I mean, he said this last week, he's getting blanked by Netanyahu. Well, if you're the president of the United States and Netanyahu's blanking you, I won't use the word, why can't you tell him to stop? You know, I mean, get
right.
off of me.
Right.
Stop doing that. You know, it's a charade. It's a charade.
Well, we heard reports that the president is actually scared of Benjamin Netanyahu, scared of Israel. We know the reports, which have been confirmed, I believe, in the Washington Post, that when members of the Israeli coalition came to the United States, they bugged and used listening devices on American Secret Service. Like, these are our friends. These are good friends. So there is definitely a palpable nervousness about criticizing them. You know what I'm just furious about, Dan? I'll just be... I'm so sick and tired of when we call out... Oh, we're sending $6 billion to Israel. Shut up, you anti-Semite. No, I'm America first. I want that. I want my U.S. tax dollars here in the United States. I want to fix our infrastructure. Why are we looking at China with a massive, 1,000-mile-an-hour train and we can't build anything in the United States? We're going to send $6 billion to a country that has a budget surplus and a space force? I'm sick of it. And then you get labeled. I'm just sick of the silence of conservatives who, for whatever reason, can't speak out on this issue. I'm sick of it.
Well, the good news is that, our views are prevailing. The actual America First views are prevailing. I, to be honest, never thought I would see someone like Megyn Kelly go on with Tucker Carlson and say, look, all Americans under 30 hate Israel. You know, that's an amazing thing for someone like her to say. And more you're seeing people with real... with a real audience, including, you have to say, Charlie Kirk, who have started seeing the light on our sort of very unfortunate relationship with a particular country, and they're starting to speak out. And that's why they're in panic mood. That's why, you know, what is it, three radical pro-Zionist billionaires are taking over TikTok, because the kids were using TikTok to discuss how much they hated seeing the Holocaust happening in Gaza. And they're in panic mode, but our numbers continue to grow. And that's particularly true among conservatives and young conservatives. So it's more dangerous now, of course, and this money, probably this new money to Israel, a lot of it, even though it won't come into the pipe for a few years, a lot of it is with the inevitable war with Iran in mind. Nevertheless, there is a limited window of time, I think, that they can continue to operate with impunity.
I think you're right. There is this, like, and they take advantage of it too. Do you notice, like, the weekend that everyone in America is distracted by the horror of the assassination of Charlie Kirk? What happened while we weren't looking? Absolute destruction. One of the largest bombing campaigns of the war so far in Gaza, because we were all paying attention.
Plus,
to the death
Americans
of Charlie Kirk.
Killed in Lebanon. Like, we're supposed to be upset when.
Beautiful young family. I don't know if you saw the picture. Beautiful young family. Killed.
Right.
Beautiful kids killed.
Well, maybe we should explain that. Israel killed an American killed, family yes. in Lebanon.
And then the U.S. Embassy,
we're
instead
supposed
of being
to care
royally,
about that.
Yeah, instead of being royally PO'd, the U.S. Embassy said, well, they're probably not really Americans. We're not sure, whatever. Next question, please change the subject. They just don't care what's happening.
Dan McAdams, always great to see you. Thank you for being a clear-headed voice in all of this. Our audience loves you, by the way. Thank you for being...
Thank you.
You know, for not being a sycophant. That's why we love you so much. You tell the truth. We appreciate
Thanks.
It, Dan. Great to see you.
Feeling is mutual. Feeling
all
is
right.
mutual. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, we're going to talk about this new attack on Tucker Carlson, saying that it's anti-Semitic to say that powerful people killed Jesus. That's literally
that
all it's. So I'm sorry. When did I miss it? That Jesus died of old age. Did that
yeah.
happen?
I guess you
is
know,
that the
at,
new narrative?
Yeah,
that,
at 33 years old,
did,
it was just old age that
yeah,
killed him on that
did
cross.
Did Jesus have a heart attack? I didn't
yeah.
understand that. Okay, we're going to review that. Plus some lingering holes in the Charlie Kirk assassination. We are going to talk about the bullet trajectory, but only briefly, because I have other major questions that I want to address. And then we will figure this out together. mostly independents are going to handle this. Raise your hand if you believe the government will ever tell us the truth about that.
But first, I don't know if you guys saw gold hit a new all-time high. I don't know if you saw that Russia and China now hit new stockpiles of gold, over 2,300 ounces of gold now in stockpiles in these central banks. Why? And then we saw the devaluing of the U.S. currency last week, once again, by the Fed, lowering interest rates. This is all part of a plan, of course, to devalue the U.S. dollar. So all of this is happening. But, like, how are you as an American protecting your family right now? Are you, do you have money sitting in a U.S. savings account and you're hoping that, hey, may that 0.01% interest rate that I'm getting, or are you going to buy some treasury bonds, which are also now dropping in value? That's how you're going to protect your family's future. Or do you have a plan? And, you know, we've been sounding this alarm for years, and I hope that many of you have paid attention to it and do whatever you want. I mean, but I've always been saying, please start investing in tangible things. Gold, silver, and real estate. Protect those things have sustained for 5,000 years. And I don't care what company you use. I don't care how you do it. Just protect yourself. The government is lying to you, and the U.S. dollar is going to continue declining over the next few months. How are you preparing? So I can tell you how Natalie and I prepare. We've been slowly, for the past few years, just acquiring precious metals, silver and gold. And silver, particularly right now, is still not at its all-time high, and it just passed $40 an ounce for silver. Gold, again, hit a new all-time high. So our friends at Lear Capital, again, you can use any company you want, but these are who Lear is who Natalie and I use to buy precious metals. You can have it shipped right to your front door, or you can have it stored in an off-site guarded facility, totally up to you. And now up to 6 states are now allowing you to transact in gold. Florida being one of them. So states across the country are saying, we're allowing you to use U.S. dollars and also gold. And J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, saying that gold is going to hit over $4,000 an ounce, up to $4,500 an ounce, perhaps in the next few months. Anyway, give Lear a call. They're a fantastic American company. Again, no pressure. Just talk to them. They're an American company that wants to have a conversation with you. Imagine that. Just get on the phone. And they'll walk you through it. They'll hold your hand through the whole process. They'll talk to you about what's right for your family. Call them 1-800-613-3557 to get your free precious metals guide. They'll send it right to your door. You can talk about it with your spouse, your loved ones. Or you can go to the website learredacted.com and you can receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. We've been using them for years. Again, no pressure. This is one of those companies that even if you buy the gold, they have a 24-hour period where if you bought it and you're like, I changed my mind. I want to go back to U.S. dollars. Right. No questions asked. They will cancel your transaction. No pressure at all. No questions asked. Call them today. 1-800-613-3557. Our thanks.
Beyond that, actually, we made an error in one of our investments in an IRA. It was like a transaction you're not supposed to make in this certain year. They totally undid it for us. They didn't charge me anything. They didn't ask any questions. My accountant said, you're not allowed to do this in this year. I wrote them. They took care of it. I have all the documentation in the case of an audit. I was like, really? I thought this was going to be horrible. And it wasn't. And it was absolutely my mistake to make this in an IRA. So anyhow, I just want to put that
yes,
out there.
Great company. Anyway, you do you. Again, no pressure, but they're a big supporter of our show, and that's who we personally use. So thanks to Lear. All right. Yeah, okay.
This one's on
you. Yeah, oh, is it? All right. I am fed up, and I'm pissed off at the attacks on my friend Tucker Carlson. I'm done. So this weekend at Charlie Kirk's funeral, Tucker Carlson gave what I thought was one of the most heartfelt, powerful, really short, like 8-minute speech that you will ever hear.
It was 3 minutes.
No, it wasn't 3 minutes. The whole speech was like 8 minutes long. Anyway, I thought this was one of the most heartfelt and powerful 8-minute speeches you'll ever hear. Comparing the silencing of Jesus Christ, the murder of Jesus Christ, to the murder 2,000 years later of Charlie Kirk. And after what happened right after that, like clockwork, a coordinated smear campaign, social media accounts, all sounding like they were reading from the exact same script, rushed to social media. It's like they copy and pasted this stuff, saying his eulogy, Tucker's eulogy, was anti-Semitic. anti-Israel. But here's the problem. Tucker never said anything about the Jews, and he never mentioned Israel once. And yet within hours, of course, the destroy Tucker machine was in full gear. Tucker's spreading blood libel. Tucker's got a mental condition. Tucker's laugh proves that he's unstable. It was all copy and paste hysteria. And back when I used to co-host with Tucker Carlson, I've been friends with him for years. If I made a joke, he would laugh. He'd always laugh like that. That's his laugh. Now he's mentally unstable because he laughed? Okay. It was all copy and pasted hysteria. And it tells you one thing. They are terrified of Tucker's message. Friend of the show, Owen Schroyer, noticed it as well. He posted this. Why is my entire timeline a never-ending flow of attacks on Tucker Carlson? And it was. Like, if you went to the For You feed of Twitter yesterday, or do it right now, it's just like all copy and pasted attacks on Tucker Carlson. Who's funding you know what that? Else? I'd love to know.
What I'd else is weird know. About it is they're posting all this during a memorial.
Right. I know. Yes. I couldn't believe that, too. Like, people are saying they're tweeting during a memorial. They're taking pictures with their friends and they're posting about, like, that really bothered me, of course. And especially because so many of those people were in the room that were posting these messages. So we're going to play Tucker's remarks in his own words. We clipped down like a 3-minute version of his larger speech so you can hear them unedited. Because if you only read the Twitter spin, then you'd think he stood up at a funeral and blamed Jews for killing Jesus. He didn't. He was talking about silence, censorship, the gospel message itself, the powerful people who collaborated to kill Jesus. I should point out that most people didn't even watch Tucker's speech. And you can see it in their responses, by the way. They didn't even watch it. They said, like, oh, I didn't watch it, but wow, I can't believe he attacked the Jews. He's a horrible man for blaming Israel. I didn't watch the speech, but he's horrible. Okay. Anyway, they admitted they didn't watch the speech, so we're going to play just a section of it here. Watch.
And Charlie would have loved this, not just because he loved large groups of people, but because ultimately he was a Christian evangelist. And it actually reminds me of my favorite story ever. So it's about 2,000 years ago in Jerusalem, and Jesus shows up and he starts talking about the people in power, and he starts doing the worst thing that you can do, which is telling the truth about people, and they hate it, and they just go bonkers. They hate it, and they become obsessed with making him stop. This guy's got to stop talking. We've got to shut this guy up. And I can just sort of picture the scene in a lamp-lit room with a bunch of guys sitting around eating hummus, thinking about what do we do about this guy telling the truth about us. We must make him stop talking. And there's always one guy with the bright idea, and I could just hear him say, I've got an idea, why don't we just kill him? That'll shut him up. That'll fix the problem. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Everything is inverted, and the Beatitudes tell it, I think, the most crisply. Everything is sort of the opposite of what you think it's going to be. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That is true, and you can feel it here. The thing about Charlie's message, I've thought a lot about it, and I'm trying not to be emotional because in addition to everything else, he was a wonderful man and a decent man and one of those rare people you meet who you just groove with in conversation and have these very intense conversations that you don't stop thinking about, which is my experience with him. But the main thing about Charlie and his message, he was bringing the gospel to the country. He was doing the thing that the people in charge hate most, which is calling for them to repent. So how is Charlie's message different? And Charlie was a political person who was deeply interested in coalition building and in getting the right people in office because he knew that vast improvements are possible politically. But he also knew that politics is not the final answer. It can't answer the deepest questions, actually. That the only real solution is Jesus. And the reason, it's really simple. Politics, at its core, is a process of critiquing other people and getting them to change. Christianity, the gospel message, the message of Jesus, begins with repentance. Christianity calls upon you to change. Our core prayer, given to us by Jesus, the Lord's Prayer, demands that we forgive other people, but preceding that is a request for our forgiveness. In other words, forgive us our sins, meditate on what we've done wrong, how we've fallen short, and then it becomes possible to forgive other people.
If you watched the speech, you heard it. No mention of Jews, no mention of Israel. Instead, he talked about how Charlie Kirk was silenced, murdered, and how that's not unlike what happened 2,000 years ago. Jesus preached a radical message of truth, and the powers of the day couldn't stand it. So they conspired to kill him. That's not blood libel. That's the Bible. That's the gospel according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's history. Let's just lay out exactly what the scripture says here. Powerful religious leaders in Jerusalem, Jewish elders, priests, scribes, and Pharisees wanted Jesus gone. Why? Because he threatened their authority. Jewish elders, priests, scribes, and Pharisees couldn't have someone with more power than them. So the leaders pushed the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, to execute Jesus. But of course, Pilate was, you know, famously resisted this. He famously said, "I find no fault in this man." But he caved to the mob. Rome carried out the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. That's the story. That's what Tucker was referencing. So to say that even speaking the gospel is somehow anti-Semitic is absurd. If that's the new standard, then every Christian reading the Bible on Sunday morning, I guess, is guilty of some kind of hate speech. So you see what he's saying. He's drawing a parallel. Charlie Kirk was mocked, smeared, censored, eventually murdered for spreading the very same message that Jesus preached. Tucker's message was that it didn't silence him. In fact, it made him stronger. And Tucker laughed to the point like that it was absurd. Like, that's why he was laughing. People are like, oh, he was cackling. He was laughing at the absurdity of the plan. Let's kill this man who's preaching the truth. And it had the opposite effect. It grew into a worldwide movement. That's why Tucker laughed. Not because he has a mental condition. He's laughing at the absurdity of the plan. So Tucker's point is not about attacking a group of people. It's about warning us. Truth tellers are always targets. They tried to shut Charlie up, just like they tried to shut Jesus up. And the more they attack, the more the truth spreads. That's how this works. But go online and you think Tucker had just launched into a neo-Nazi rally. I mean, here's just a smattering of what flooded Twitter. This guy, I think the Trump administration should boycott him. No more access. And that awful cackle at the end is just cringeworthy. Jeremy says, did Tucker Carlson just accuse Jews of killing Christ, killing Jesus during his speech at Charlie Kirk's memorial? Here's others. Everyone sees it. No excuses. Once again, Tucker Carlson finds a way to insinuate that Charlie Kirk's murder had something to do with the Jews. Anti-Semitic innuendo, cackling like a chicken, never appropriate, but even less so at a memorial service for a great man. And the hummus reference. Tucker, hummus enters in Jerusalem, killed Jesus. Hummus eaters in Jerusalem killed Jesus. Kind of like Charlie Kirk, if you think about it, manic laughter. That's not when the laughter took place, actually. It was about the silencing of someone. Do we have more of these? Just more of these. Take a look. Tucker Carlson is a modern-day neo-Nazi. What a disgusting and loathsome human being to use Charlie Kirk's funeral to launch into an unhinged anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. Tirade is unconscionable defilement of Charlie's memory and everything he stood for. So it's uncanny how all of these posts are like identical. Almost all of them were written by the same hand, copy and pasted attacks. Like, here, we need you to send these things out.
Well, they've been handed the tools for months by the Anti-Defamation League, who have specifically said that if you promote the myth that Jews killed Jesus, then that is anti-Semitism. So they heard what they've been fine-tuned programmed to hear, even though no group was mentioned. And again, we can talk about the Jewish groups that had a hand in the persecution of Jesus, even though there were many Jewish followers of Jesus who did not want this. So we're not saying, by and large, and we should also continue to talk about the Jewish current belief that Jesus was not the Savior, and they are still awaiting. We can continue to talk about that. But that was not said in this speech. They have been programmed to hear that and scream anti-Semitism. It is, let's tap in to your programming here on anti-Semitism, which will shut you down. Because once we say that, oh no, you can't go any further. You're hit with the brick wall that is anti-Semitism. And so now we can't hear you.
People in our chat room, though, definitely agree with Tucker's speech. Tucker's speech was great. Most people saying that, absolutely. So it's uncanny how identical all these posts are, almost as if they were written by the same hand, copy and pasted to attacks. That's how you know it's coordinated. I think they're covering up the truth about Charlie Kirk, that yes, he was in lockstep with Israel, but it started in recent months to really call out the Jewish American lobby that funded a lot of liberal causes, a lot of Marxist causes. They don't want you to see clips like this. This was just days before he was assassinated, Charlie calling out the Jewish American lobby who had been funding a lot of these liberal Marxist things like Black Lives Matter. Watch.
Jewish communities have been pushing the exact kind of hatred against whites that they claim to want people to stop using against them. Now, I don't like generalizations. Not every Jewish person believes that. But it is true the Anti-Defamation League was part and parcel with Black Lives Matter. It is true that some of the largest financiers of left-wing anti-white causes have been Jewish Americans. They went all in on woke, and it wasn't just ADL. It was some of the top Jewish organizations in the country that have done that. In fact, we have seen this with the recent retreat of Jewish donations that are no longer going to be administered to colleges, right? Mark Rowan, Leon Kopperman. Can we get that full list? It's very powerful. The part of the so that's totally true. And by the way, Tucker Carlson reinforces this. So I'm going to kind of it was quite a day on the internet. Tucker Carlson was interviewing Candace Owens. We have Candace Owens coming up next hour. And Tucker Carlson mentions that Jewish Americans have primarily been financing cultural Marxist ideas. We said this, by the way, last week, and people came after us.
We were on top of it.
We actually said it in a different way. We said, I'm glad that Jewish Americans are reconsidering their financing of cultural Marxism. And people misunderstood it intentionally and slandered us as being anti-Semites. But listen to this. Tucker Carlson is completely correct by saying this, that the philosophical foundation of anti-whiteness has been largely financed by Jewish donors in the country.
Ooh, we can't say that. Don't want people to know that clip. Look, Redacted will never play that game. Tucker Carlson has an open invitation to join this show anytime he wants. We're not going to cancel him. We're not going to participate in this, you know, some fake outrage cycle because a man quoted a Bible verse at a funeral. And think about this. If you can twist a simple, like, gospel reference into hate speech somehow, rewrite history, then anything can be branded as hate speech. I mean, tomorrow it might be you or maybe the church this, you know, this weekend. It doesn't really matter. Or your pastor. Of course, this isn't about Tucker. This is about truth. It's about whether you're allowed to speak plainly about scripture, about faith, about history. I mean, people try to rewrite the history of the United States all the time, try to rewrite the faith of our founding fathers all the time. And, you know, it's about being able to speak that way without being branded with labels meant to silence you. So we will not be silenced, and we have an open door policy here. Tucker's welcome on our show anytime, so the mob can try to twist the words all they want, but the tape doesn't lie. You just heard it for yourself.
You know, something Clayton and I, we took our family to dinner after the memorial, and we did watch all 5 hours, and we made sure that our children watched it, too, because I felt like it was an important cultural moment. And I said, seeing this bad faith reaction playing out online of people who, I mean, I think it's okay to say that Tucker was nervous about some of the people who would be present at that event who have been coming for him because he's unwilling to stop asking questions about the Israeli government's influence in American life and politics. And then we saw that those people were waiting to take the opportunity to hit at his speech, right? To deflate some of the power of his speech. And I said, as we were at dinner, I said, you know what? I feel so upset about this that I'm willing to walk myself over to the camp that is, we will keep asking questions. And if Tucker Carlson is there and Candace Owens are there, I will stand there and I'm willing to plant my flag on that side. And anyone who wants to say those people need to shut up and those people are odious, then, you know, then bring that at me. as well. And that's sort of how I felt. And Clayton was like, wow, that's not normally how Natalie speaks. But I felt that in that moment, almost like if this is the radical camp, I'm going to stand there. So let me know how that struck you. And especially because of the holes in this story that we continue to have, which we're going to talk about after this. How do you feel?
I've been angry about it, and I just can't stand. I just don't like that my whole For You feed was like filled with all of these like copy and pasted attacks on Tucker. Like, you know, it seemed, you know, that there's a massive amount of money behind it. You know that these people are largely funded and they're pushing this out. They're getting it from somewhere, and it's a coordinated, and I can't stand that kind of stuff. I hate this sort of phony.
Yeah.
You know, the phony posts and all of that garbage and the sort of coordinated attack against a friend of mine who is speaking the truth and is unafraid. You know, I'll just say something out of he told me the other day, and he said, you know, after Charlie's death, I just wanted to go to the woods. And he's like, but I had to stop myself. And he's like, because now I need to stand up and I need to speak out. And I can't just like go to the woods and go fishing. Like I need to stand up. He's like, I realized I was sort of being like, not scared is the right word, but just.
Well, you can give yourself your reaction. The work will continue. It doesn't have to be in the first 48 hours. I feel like everybody can have their own grieving period in their own way.
Yeah. But it was like the vacuum was being filled by lies. You know, that's the thing. Like, and so that's what I think was really important for Tucker, was to tell the truth. And there, it was being filled by lies. And you saw people like Netanyahu, like coming out video after video, interview after interview, like, oh, Charlie and I were great friends. He loved it. No, he didn't. He was not good friend. Tell the truth, you liar.
Do you find it true? I don't know if you have the same experience, but like anytime I go on X now, all I see is Laura Loomer. And then on Friday, I got an email from Laura Loomer. And I'm like, I'm not on any list. Like, how in the hell did I get any? And I responded and I was like, how in the hell did you get my email address? Like, I don't even know how it happened.
That's what people in the chat room, they're like, yeah, Laura Loomer is like all over the timeline. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's like, why are these things being elevated and, you know, promoted everywhere?
Right. The thing that really, like, I felt was such bad form was there was someone, I don't remember the creator, said massive thunderous applause for Tucker as he takes the stage and afterwards. And then she retweeted that and said, not really. I was in the room. A lot of people don't like him. And I was like, this is someone's memorial. You know, this is not how it, I mean, I know, I hope that there is a more private ceremony and that's not, but do you have any decorum? Is this the time to say like, no, that guy's not popular here? I just don't understand that. So anyhow, if that makes me, you know, a target of those people. I don't know, you know,
no.
I don't want that, but I don't see this as useful.
No. All right. Well, okay. We got more news to get to here. We're going to talk and look at the holes in the Charlie Kirk assassination story. There's still a lot of unanswered questions. And, you know, we've gone through the funeral service. We've gone through the memorial service. And yet we're being sort of told to just like move along, don't ask questions anymore. But there are a lot of questions still outstanding. By the way, when will we have a medical examiner's report? Like, how long does it take to get a medical examiner's report? 12 days later?
Right.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to tackle that. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Chapter, because did you know that millions of seniors are on the wrong Medicare plan? Most don't even know it. And in fact, Trump's Department of Justice sued three major Medicare brokers for allegedly claiming to be unbiased while secretly steering seniors towards the plans with the biggest kickbacks for them. Well, Chapter does not do that, and that's why we've partnered with them. They don't work for the government. They don't work for big insurance. They work for you. They're the only advisors that compare every Medicare plan nationwide to find out what's best for you, and they'll even help you if you're hit with wrongful medical bills. That's real advocacy. They've saved the average senior $1,100 per year, and in fact, one of our good friends used Chapter. They're saving thousands going forward, and the best part is that this is a free service. All it takes is 20 minutes of your time. Call them, figure out what they can teach you, what they can advocate for you. Can they look over your plan and see if you're on the right one? Call them at 202-655-5811 to connect with the only Medicare advisors we trust here at Redacted. You'll be glad you did. And in fact, most people in our audience say they wish they'd called sooner. So you can go to askchapter.org/redacted or call the number on your screen. Once again, that's askchapter.org/redacted. Well, here's something haunting about the Charlie Kirk Memorial. This is something that I felt as I watched this personally, is we don't know if someone in that room knows something or betrayed him in some way as a representative of the deep state. We know that the FBI narrative does not make sense. That's why there's this unease at watching this. It is not... I don't think this bodes well for the Republican Party, even though there were those who sort of used it as the opportunity to validate the Republican Party. I feel like this is a hole that needs to be answered. I am glad that Republicans are the ones who are leading the charge to ask it. Here is one post. This is a long one, but it's worth looking into and reading. I only clipped the first part. This person said, he was sitting there. There's a video here of his seat and his angle. And he says, everyone here is mad because we don't feel like we trust the government. We're here because we very much feel moved by Charlie Kirk. What we don't feel like is that this is the government that will give us the answers. And there, he says the atmosphere was despondent. I think this could mean trouble for the Trump administration because it did not coalesce opposition to the left. President Trump did say that, but that I don't think was the temperature of the whole event. It sort of increased government suspicion. The only message that seemed to have universal support was the spiritual one. The government narrative, however, felt hollow because of these gaps. Now, FBI Director Kash Patel didn't really do much to help this when he posted this just before the event. What he's saying here, and you can read this for yourself, is a bunch of blah-bitty-blook about how they're going to look at all angles. There's still stuff. We don't know. You know, probably he sees these holes too, you would hope. But if you think that he's going to come and be forthcoming with these holes, I've got a bridge to sell you, because this is what he said last week about Jeffrey Epstein, and I about fell out of my chair.
You've seen most of the files. Who, if anyone, did Epstein traffic these young women to besides himself?
Himself. There is no credible information. None. If there were, I would bring the case yesterday that he trafficked to other individuals. And the information we have, again, is limited.
So the answer is no one?
For the information that we have.
In the files?
In the case file.
Okay. Now.
There are no words for my reaction to that. So why is Ghislaine Maxwell in prison? Why is Prince Andrew? What?
Don't ask questions.
So my confidence in the FBI is low. Go ahead, Philip, please.
I was just going to say, I just think Kash Patel, with the holes in the Charlie Kirk assassination and then all of the holes in the Epstein files, it's like he's not interested in investigating where the holes come from or what they mean. He's just interested in plugging them and moving on.
Yeah. Right. There are holes there. Okay, let's move on. What do I need to say on TV next? Okay, so we're being given strange stories about the bullet itself. Let's start there. One question that serious thinkers are grappling with is the exit wound. If the weapon was indeed a Mauser Model 98 bolt action rifle, there would seem to have been an exit wound and quite likely others hit by the trajectory of this, but there wasn't. Why? So a Turning Point spokesperson says the bullet did not go through because Charlie's body miraculously stopped that. So here is that post. You know, we have been given a lot of rumblings about Charlie Kirk being immortalized as a saint. So are they going to now sell us that there's some kind of superhuman? He says right there in the center, it didn't go through. Charlie's body stopped it. His bone density was so healthy. And we have been told that he was a very healthy man. He didn't drink. He didn't like to eat junk food. He liked to run a lot. Okay, you can make yourself a cyborg that can stop bullets, but they don't. You can stop them, but that doesn't stop that from killing you. Some of the community notes on that post are enlightening. Like, that's literally not possible. There are many credible ballistic experts that say that this shot could not have done that. That this shot could not have come from the front. I'm going to put a pin on that because neither of us are experts here. We should not be saying one thing or the other. We can bring experts that will bring contextualization of this, but I don't feel ready to argue that. Clayton feels a little bit more strongly about this. His bone stopped it bit. Do you want to say anything about that or should we wait?
I mean, look, I haven't seen a medical examiner's report.
An autopsy, right.
I'm just going off of what I'm hearing from sources who spoke to the surgeon who worked on his body and where the trajectory of the bullet hit him in the chest, hit a bone, fractured his vertebrae, broke into pieces of fragments, and exited through his neck. That's what we were reporting kind of right early on with FBI ballistics experts right at the very beginning, that he was shot in the front, hit a bone, traveled up his spine, destroyed his spine, destroyed four or five vertebrae, exited out of his neck. Unless I see some evidence otherwise, again, we don't have a medical examiner's report, so I'm not going to throw my hat into the I know exactly what happened crowd.
Right.
You know?
I feel very uncomfortable with this. He was capable of superhuman bone density. I feel very uncomfortable with that. So I'm going to say I put that on a scale of 1 to 10, believable scale. Maybe you could put a number in the chat. I'm going with a 1 on that. Where would you put it?
The bone density?
Yeah, that the bone stopped it.
I don't think it stopped it. I think we clearly...
That's literally what he said.
But I think then Alex Jones followed up with him and had a conversation afterwards where he clarified that it broke into pieces and fragments. So it didn't stop it. The bullet just was whoa, man, Charlie Kirk's a man of steel, just stopped. I think there are reports from the surgeon that there were bone fragments. There were fragments found at the scene and there were fragments found out
and
through all of his neck
and his chest.
And that
the bullet is still in there. Okay. All right. Then an autopsy would show us that the bullet is still there. Can you put the live chat on instead of, because I want to see what numbers are we coming with in the unbelievability?
Mike Hawk says here, man of steel, they say his neck stopped a 30-06 round. Yeah.
Okay. No, I want to see the numbers. Can you?
What numbers?
I asked on a 1 to 10 scale, are we putting these? You guys are putting these at negatives.
Some people
think
0.
This is how I feel. And Clayton's in the, I would say, in our conversation, Clayton's in the 0 to 5. And I am about a 0.25.
I'm not buying the story that it stopped a bullet. I'm my point is that, no, his body inside was ripped apart by a bullet. So I don't exactly know. His body didn't stop the bullet.
And it just stays there like a pinball, boing, 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 boing. You're dead now.
That does happen. I mean, that's not an uncommon occurrence for a bullet to strike a bone and then ricochet out. So the entry and exit wound for a bullet is not always a straight line. It probably rarely is.
Okay.
So, because
I come back to, I'm not an expert in this. Kyle Serafin, former FBI whistleblower, FBI ballistics expert, said on our show that from everything he's heard and seen, it went right in his chest, struck bone, tore right up and spins around because it's still rotating. So it's going in a weird, then it's all pattern. Okay. Struck his spine, destroyed his spine, went up and out his neck. And
okay.
Until I see evidence otherwise, that's what I'm.
All right. I really don't. I don't want to get to because we don't know here on this show. So let's go to the things that do not make sense. Now, this is something that Candace Owens has been putting together on her own timeline. And I can't get it out of my head is that the authorities say, according to the indictment and the authorities' statements, that the shooter turned himself in 33 hours later. They keep signaling to us it was 33 hours between the time he took the shot and that he walked in to turn himself in. And then they raided the house of his rumor love of him and his lover roommate. And then they released the lover free and clear. And then the governor went on TV to say they got him. So I just wrote this out because it seems so unbelievable. So the assassination happens 12:23 p.m. on Wednesday, September 10th. Then you add those 33 hours. And then he walks in and turns himself in 33 hours later is the next day at 9:30 at night. Alleged shooter turns himself in. Now he goes, they talk to him for a bit. And then a few hours later, they're like, well, I guess we're going to have to raid your house and take in your roommate. That doesn't happen. They say a few hours. So it can't be an hour later. It has to be at least 2 hours after he turns himself in. The raid cannot happen at his house until at least 11:30 at night. 11:30 on Thursday. So then, 8 hours later, we have Utah Governor Cox going on TV and say, we got him, all good, we have everything. We got his computer, we raided the house, and the roommate was released. So this raid happens in the middle of the night. They take all his computers. Now, they told us they're very active on Discord, on Reddit, on all kinds of social media. They were able to look through everything, take all the forensics, everything, and release the roommate in 8 hours. At the very least, the most generous is 8 hours. That seems wrong to me. The BBC ran this article interviewing people who lived in and around the house that was raided. And there was a woman who said, yeah, it was kind of weird. I was walking. I was out for an evening walk. And I heard the feds break in and say, freeze, come out now. An evening walk at 11 p.m.? At the earliest, this could have been 11:30. Because they said a few hours. 9:30, he turns himself in. A few hours later, they start the raid close to midnight, and there's a woman on a walk who heard it. Okay, that's kind of unbelievable, right? And then Ada, and again, look at this timestamp on the press conference of Governor Cox, 8 a.m. the next morning. So you're telling me that between 11:30 at night and 8 a.m., you've been through everything, you did all the questioning, you looked through all the forensics, and we got him, it's good. Just this guy, not that guy. We're feeling good about this. How do you feel about that? That's the thing I can't get over is, no, you can't be done if he doesn't come in till 9:30.
No.
You cannot be done.
No, but this is what I did a video on last week. It's like you're moving so quickly to wrap up this investigation that you're like, oh, we got our guy, lone gunman, good. We're all finished here. Nothing to see here. Move along. Like we've done, we completed everything. And then, of course, you get the blowback from the FBI after that news started coming out. Like, we're done here, lone gunman. And then Kash Patel releases that big statement that says, no, no, we're going to continue to pull every thread. We're going to look down every rabbit hole and continue to unravel this thing as much as we can.
Right.
And forensics is not a fast thing. You know, like forensics.
You're echoing badly, David.
Yeah. Forensics takes a long time. Like, it doesn't matter what you're doing forensics on. I mean, a laptop, because like they also got to look at the connection. Like you said, Discord, there's other connections right. involved, and they didn't go down any kind of connection route to be like, yeah. okay, we need to question this person, this person, this person. At the very least, question them, which would take hours to find them, talk to them.
Right.
Right. And how many of them like lawyered up and like, I mean, again, that could take a long time. You're going to subpoena these individuals to get in from it. Because if like, you know, like Kyle Serafin always says, he's like, you should never talk to the FBI. So like if like the FBI and investigators come to your house, be like, sorry, call my lawyer. And like, so how long will that take? You're going to go through a subpoena process and have a discussion. Could take weeks, months, you know, could take years to get to the bottom of that. But no, you did it overnight.
Right. And don't you, this is part I haven't looked into, so please enlighten me if you know something about this, but don't they need permission to go and raid somebody's house? If he walks in at 9:30 and then it's like, oh, I guess we're going to have to go to your house. Let's get that together. You're going to have to get that from a judge. That takes a while. Right. So, and then they got that, they have everything and they're satisfied. They've done it overnight. You would think that the interview lasts at least that long and the governor's ready, TV camera ready, because they had to be ready to say something to the press at least an hour earlier, get the press in a room, say we're going to say something. That takes at least an hour. So you're telling me that it started at midnight and they were done by 7 a.m. ready to give this fully baked story? I cannot buy that. Not to mention the fact, and I have not looked from... Yeah, please.
Oh, well, because Tyler Robinson, they were even saying it was like at the time, he's not talking, which means right. It's not like he went in and confessed. He was yes. turned in. But even if somebody comes in and confesses, they still need to verify it because they've already had two suspects they picked up that were the wrong person. So like yes. at that point, like even with a confession, they still have to verify it. And if he's not talking, how could they verify anything that quickly?
Right.
Enough to
exactly.
say,
I can't.
We got he's not cooperating. He's not talking. How do you verify that? That means you must have overwhelming evidence through text messages. You must have an overwhelming abundance of forensic evidence, DNA evidence, everything. We don't need this guy to talk because we've got so much evidence that we don't need him to open his mouth and sing like a bird.
Right. And you would think, given, like Philip said, they had the wrong guy twice. They might be, let's be a little bit more careful with this one. And they're completely convinced that the roommate had nothing to do with it, right? And then they give us this text exchange, which some people online, I find this funny because we did go over some of the ludicrous nature of this text exchange. Like, my love, I will be getting my vehicle and change my outfit, that instead of that AI, they asked AI to write a believable text exchange of people in their 20s, and that AI might have mistakenly thought that it was people in the 1920s, because that is more the lexicon of people who might say squad car, like really got that copper, yo, like the Dick Tracy era. You know, again, that in and of itself is ridiculous enough. They should apologize to us for that, because that doesn't make sense. And again, yeah. And another thing is, if this is your lover that you're talking about, you don't need to say in a text, "My dad has been so MAGA lately." This is something you have been talking about at home for a long time. Clayton and I talk about our parents' politics all the time. It's not something I would ever need to enlighten him about in a text, right? That also, these are not okay. Let me know what you think of these things. We're not going to let them go.
Well, I want a medical examiner's report. Like, give me a medical examiner's report so we can actually study it and we can have real answers as to what actually, I mean, so a number of people witnessed it, saw the wound. They know exactly where he was shot. You know, we need some clarity on that from a medical examiner's report. How many fragments were inside? All of that. Where was the exit wound? Was it on his neck? All of those pieces of it. So,
and for me, again, I didn't get to make this point, is that the BBC woman who said she was just out for an evening stroll. If you were going to go out for a stroll, would you at midnight? Midnight is when this had to have happened. Would you call it an evening stroll? Can you put the chat, please? We're working on this together. Would you say if you were out walking the dog or walking by yourself, and the fact that this woman, Sherry Steele, Candace Owens researchers were never able to find the existence of such woman in this complex, in this area. So I have not looked for myself, but the fact that she doesn't seem to have been able to be found is interesting, because why did you hear this raid happen in the middle of the night? It's this 7-hour bit that I can't, that's, this is, you know, there's always something where like, nope, that I'm with you. This is not okay. This to me is it.
Some people saying, well, I would not even believe the medical examiner's report.
I'm with you on that too. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. And hey, we have a daily newsletter that you should all subscribe to. It's totally free. If you want to check it out, just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address. We never sell your information like other people. We don't do that. You just sign up for the newsletter and you'll receive it in your inbox tomorrow. We published it Monday through Thursday, and you can read it over your cup of coffee in the morning. Check your spam folder when you sign up, because you'll receive an email from me, just clayton@redacted.inc, welcoming you. But you'll have to click on and confirm that, yes, you do want to receive the daily newsletter. It's, like I said, you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee, covering the big stories of the day that the mainstream media largely ignores. So just go to redacted.inc, put in your information, sign up, and you will receive it tomorrow morning on Tuesday. What are people saying in the chat?
They're not buying this.
They're not buying.
They are not buying a single piece of it. Not the superhuman bone density. Not the no exit wound. Not
007 Kyle, thank you for your $10 super chat. Says if we never found out about Building 7, do you honestly believe we'll ever know the truth about poor Charlie? Good point.
Well, we never found it out from the government. We found it out from ourselves, though. Right?
Yeah.
So we trust our narrative that we have researched. So we may never get validation from the government,
JFK assassination is a good indicator. Like, we still don't have answers to that. I mean, we know, but we don't have answers for official answers from the government for that. How many years ago was that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, was it 70? Well, no, it was, yeah. How many years ago was the 63? Someone do some quick math on that. 1963. And they already like covered up the crime scene. They were already out there like pouring concrete and like putting down new slabs and putting down new pavers and everything like that. Like, it's crazy. It's insane. Raymond Rohrer, $5 super chat, says a survey. Who is a bigger threat to the U.S., Putin or Netanyahu?
I would go Netanyahu by far, by a long shot.
Leaps and bounds, by the way.
The amount of time I spend awake at night about what Putin's going to do is... not long. Not a lot. I don't lose a lot of sleep.
No. And yes, they are. They have been moving medium range missiles more. They've been bringing more and even the hypersonics into Belarus. Some people were wondering about that on, from the Putin side. They just ran that joint nuclear exercise they did with Belarus. Let's see. One, I don't know how to say your $5 super chat. The People's Voice, October 12th video of IDF helicopters shooting down Israeli festival goers. Yeah, I mean, we know that there was, you know, large amount of deaths. The most amount of deaths on that day were thanks to Israeli helicopters firing on individuals. Joy of Lord is my strength says Putin doesn't keep me up at night. That's right.
Not really.
No.
It's our own reaction to what Putin does that keeps me up at night. So anyhow, all right, let us know what you think. If there's something we're missing, there's a lot of conversations that were tagged on X, and I'm finding it challenging, but I want to stick with this. So let's do that collectively.
Yeah, and I just want to bring an update on a story we were following here at Redacted, and I think...
The ostriches?
Yeah, I mean, people are reporting that this is happening. I'm trying to get answers on the latest on this because our friends who are running the ostrich farm, University Ostrich Farm in Canada, where they're trying to cull the 400 ostriches, they've been worried all weekend. Someone's in the chat saying it's happening at this moment. I don't know, but apparently police have cut the power to the ostrich farm, and they are trying to get in there and to basically kill all of these ostriches, the 400 of them, the government, over the weekend. So... it's so terrible. We were doing everything we could here to try to get awareness about it. RFK Jr. stepping in, all of it. But it is the Canadian government, after all, that's going after these people. So hopefully we'll have an update on that. Hopefully tomorrow on the show. I'm just praying that they haven't gone in there and tried to kill all these animals.
Oh, but you know who was saved? Jimmy Kimmel seems to be scheduled to go back on the air on Tuesday of this week. I'm so thankful that the coastal media elites are being saved. This is a really near and dear cause to my heart. You know, I was worried that he wouldn't find work about his free speech. And now Jimmy Kimmel's coming back to the air, you guys. The media elites got their way. They threw a big fit. Who's happy for that?
Bucker Bill says, I think you're missing how Trump and Peter Thiel, along with their databases, a big, beautiful databases, will there ever be a piece on Redacted about this? Actually, tomorrow there will be. And actually, we covered it months ago on this show. So I think we've done multiple pieces on it, but we've had Whitney Webb diving deep into it, Mark Goodwin as well. But Mark is going to be on the show hopefully tomorrow. We're going to go into this biometric database. There's obviously moving right now through Europe right now to move people to a biometric database and to move to a cashless society. So I think that that's coming. It looks like the seat. Were you messaging me about something?
Yeah, I'm annoyed that you keep stopping the chat, and then I'm trying you're to read the only one who can say. React with our chat.
Okay, then just let it run. I can't read the chat.
Make a note of something that you want to react to.
I'm not going to take the time to type out a note in a notes file so I can then read it. I'm just going to read it live.
But then you stop it. I can't interact with anything, so it's just about your need to interact with the chat, and nobody
maybe
else
can. Can get
we have
you
to share these
chats.
Screens.
There's a mouse right here that
this
you can
is
grab.
Marriage. Then put the mouse right there. This is like now no, the joint remote control.
Right here on this side
not,
of the table.
You, no, this is...
You can take the mouse and you can read the chat.
Okay, I'll say something like, who's upset about this? Or how do you guys feel about this? And you pause the chat so that I can't... So then it's very rude to our audience.
Oh, okay.
Don't you think, you I'm guys? So
you know,
take
a lesson.
Take my side here, always just, you guys.
You always have to apologize. If you're a man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, audience. I did not mean to pause the chat.
Yeah. And I didn't want to have this argument in front of our audience, so that's why I sent you this nasty text, and then you called me out about it.
Exactly. Not playing that game. Anyway, by the way, I think it, according to reports, the CFIA is entering the premises for the culling of these ostriches. So, awful. Anyway, we'll have an update on that in Canada tomorrow on the show. Just awful. All right. Thank you guys for joining us today. Thanks for chatting, because I always read all your chat messages. And I really appreciate when you guys interact in the chat room. And I like to pause it and I like to like sync it in and then like read it and then read it to you guys. So that's how much I love you guys. We'll see you guys tomorrow, everyone. Bye.